This is LBC, leading Britain's conversation. Trump's first year with Simon Marks.
Hello again from Washington. I'm Simon Marks, and this segment of the programme is in some ways for veteran listeners of LBC, although you don't have to be one to enjoy it. Because before I trod the streets of Washington for this great radio station, there were others who went before me.
George Bush began his victory speech the way such speeches always begin.
I've just received a telephone call from Governor Dukakis.
The character of the next phase of battle will be determined by the results of detailed analysis of the destruction already wrought and by whatever moves Saddam Hussein might still make. This is Nick Peters in Washington for LBC News Talk 97.3.
If you are a listener of a certain age, that voice will bring back memories. Nick Peters was LBC's Washington correspondent from 1988 until 1991. He lived here in Washington until 2002, for a good chunk of that time, covered events for LBC and Independent Radio News. And I'm very happy to say that he's joining me now from London, and also joining me from London, an old friend of mine, James Mates from ITV News, who trod the sidewalks here for News at 10 from 1997 until 2003. He is now ITV News Europe editor. When he was here in Washington, he also appeared from time to time on LBC. Nick and James, thanks so much to both of you for coming in. I wanted to ask you both, we are at the end of a truly bruising year in terms of the relationship between the White House and the reporters who cover it. And I wonder, Nick Peters first, because you were here first. When you were here, what was that relationship like?
It was always distant in the sense that the presidency itself was always kept at arm's length. We were treated, I would have to say, the old press room in the White House was an absolute hovel, and the journalists were treated with enormous contempt just by the fact that the network news anchors and so on all had to operate in tiny cubby holes. There was only one miserable little microwave, and it was hell on earth if you were on a long stakeout. But even so, there was at a certain level a degree of trust, and a degree that, you know, at the end of the day, that there was a certain understanding that things would be at least dealt with fairly, and reporters were dealt with fairly. What I've witnessed in the last year here in London, looking over at the States and seeing the outright contempt with which media have been treated, is truly astonishing.
I think you ought to come back, because they've got quite a nice espresso maker there now. But James, you watch all of this, as I said, from your vantage point as Europe correspondent for ITV News. But you were here during the George W. Bush era. He never really cared that much for the press, but there was a fundamental respect there for the institution of the Fourth Estate and the free media, wasn't there?
Without question, with all the presidents I was there with, Clinton as well. It was a respect for the truth as much as anything else, a respect for the fact that the media were there to with a job to do. And even if they didn't like us very much, there were sort of rights and privileges of things that, you know, you had a right to expect, which was a certain degree of access, much more if you were from a US network than if you were from No Votes TV, as we were known in the foreign press. But nonetheless, there was a certain degree of access and a certain right to expect that what you were being told was at least close to the truth, even if Bill Clinton famously made declarations about the Lewinsky scandal that didn't necessarily live up to the badge of honest and open. But nonetheless, there was a certain respect for the truth, and there was consequences for not telling the truth. And that's what seems so different now.
And Nick, I mean, I think that gets to the heart of it, doesn't it? A president who, you know, constantly, day after day, hour after hour, dismisses the free press as the fake news media, whose senior counselor, we heard her earlier on the program, talks about a White House that disseminates alternative facts. And White House press secretaries, Sean Spicer and now Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who, unlike any of their predecessors, Republican or Democrat alike, are willing on a regular basis to tell falsehoods on behalf of the man that they represent. I mean, that's a stunning change.
It is indeed. And I have to say that it's of a piece with the entire Trump presidency. It's like he's opened a Pandora's box. The fact that he can get away with this and that his core electorate, although his ratings are way down in the low 30s, as I understand it, but his core electorate just believe that it's time the liberal media got their comeuppance, and he can play that game in the same way as I call it a Pandora's box. It's like he's allowed all these furies to come out. It's an absolute mystery to me how anybody's going to be able to put them back in the box. I think we've entered a whole new uncharted territory. And I do believe that this level of mendacity that goes on at the moment, how anybody is going to sweep that Augean stable clean, I just cannot fathom.
James, can we talk inevitably about the president's use of Twitter? I have been here long enough, and you were here at a time when presidential statements had real weight to them. Now, presidential statements, we are told by the White House, are basically whatever Donald Trump wants to tap out on his phone in his pyjamas. And I wonder if European leaders, including the Prime Minister, are getting used in any way to the presidential use of Twitter and the risks that it poses?
Well, I've seen very little in the way of European leaders emulating him in terms of the slightly inchoate sort of, get up in the morning, fire off the first thought that comes into your head or response to something you've just seen on telly, style of Twitter use. Although clearly harnessing social media is something that leaders are all over the continent are having to get to grips with, not least because their oppositions, people who would replace them in power are beginning to use it very, very effectively indeed. So you are seeing a lot more of that. But I don't think I have seen any example so far of a serious mainstream European leader coming anywhere close. Emmanuel Macron uses it very, very effectively, but in a pretty staid way.
And Nick, as you look back on your time in Washington, I mean, there was, until Trump, a pretty cozy relationship that existed between the media and the White House. The dinners, the White House Correspondents Association event once a year, the congressional dinner where the president would always come along and yuck it up with members of the press. I have to say, I've always found those events somewhat uncomfortable. It's not all that bad that he's pierced that, is it?
Well, no, I must say, and it may be because, like James, I was very much in no votes media when I was in Washington, that you couldn't help but feel that there was a rather too cozy relationship between the White House and certain elements, senior elements of the American media. And I don't know whether that was just us feeling sort of noses pressed up against the window, looking in from the cold outside. But I do feel that it never hurts for media to be kept on their toes. Our job is to keep politicians on theirs. And I think that any time it gets a little bit too cozy, it just becomes difficult, because the people who desperately need to understand the truth are the readers, the listeners, the viewers. And if they're somehow getting the message through something that's intermediated without total clarity, then I think that is not necessarily right. But that is nothing compared with what is going on now. I was horrified to see that after the train crash in Washington State, that the first thing Trump did was to tweet about his infrastructure policy, grandstanding, self-aggrandizing, and then 10 minutes later said, my thoughts are with anybody who was hurt or killed. I mean, just absolute. This man is almost inhuman in his crassness. And what the damage he's doing to the presidency, let alone to the media, is incalculable.
If I might say Simon, I do slightly disagree with Nick on that. And I think that one doesn't want to confuse the message of Trump, which has its own qualities, if I can put it that way, and the processes of how the US media and the White House interact. I mean, in many ways, I think it's much less cozy and incestuous than the lobby system in the UK, in that daily briefings are open and televised. Most US media will not use unattributable comments most of the time, if they can possibly help it, certainly not to the extent that that we do, whereas in the UK, virtually everything is unattributable. No one will speak on the record. A lot of it is done by nods and winks and briefings without being told that this is a nod and a wink and a briefing. We see this all the time, you know, something emerging from number 10, and you simply don't know where it's come from, or whether it's an ally or some sort of intrigue that is behind it all. So in many ways, I think I found the US system much more open, albeit we were kept at arm's length. Now, I don't know, because I'm not dealing with it, how that process has changed, though clearly the message and the reliability of your interactions with the US media are very, very different now.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and thank you, James, for picking me up on that. Yes, indeed, that sort of day to day relationship is much more open. I think what I was referring to was a much more cozy behind the scenes, sort of the dinner party circuit in the US, and it's no different in the UK, I suppose, as well. I just haven't really observed it, but it is a kind of coziness where we don't know what those relationships were quite like, what was said at those meetings. But yes, on a daily basis, it is much clearer in the United States than it is in the UK, although I have to say was. I suspect now that relationship has been blown to pieces.
Well, I think we can say without fear of contradiction that this is a story that will run and run in 2018 and will doubtless continue to be a page-turner. James Mates of ITV News, Nick Peters, now editorial director of The Manufacturer magazine, but an LBC veteran. You can follow them on Twitter at JamesMatesITV and at Nick Peters Media. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you very much indeed, Simon.
Thank you, Simon.
Next, he's a relatively new voice on LBC, but already very much part of the furniture. I'll talk to Nigel Farage after the break.
This is LBC, leading Britain's conversation at Christmas.